This is Radio Equal Shock with your host, Alex Smith.
Rising methane levels in the atmosphere caused a third of global warming, according to a recent UN report. Did you know that? Now there's a nonprofit group dedicated to methane action. The CEO was longtime activist and radio host Daphne Wysham. In her previous post with the Institute for Policy Studies in Washington, D.C., Daphne successfully fought fossil fuel investments and projects. I knew her work as the editor of Greenpeace back in the day, Greenpeace magazine, and then I learned some radio skills for this show from Daphne's syndicated program, Earthbeat. Wysham is an influencer, in my opinion, with a capital I, from Oregon. Daphne, welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you. It's so good to be with you, Alex.
Were you in Portland during the extreme heat dome in the summer of 2021?
You know, I was actually back east for a wedding at that point, but my husband was here, and it was terrifying. And they've found that shellfish actually were baking on the sands, and there was a lot of death and destruction in the sea. Of course, people died in their homes without access to air conditioning, and it was really a shocking wake-up call for those who weren't already shocked and woken up.
So humans have to do something about this climate situation. What got you going on methane action?
Well, you know, I ever since I learned about climate change back in the early 1990s when I was working at Greenpeace, I was primarily concerned about the impacts on the developing world because I had grown up, was born in India, and had spent my early childhood years there and really came to love the people of India and the environment of India. And, you know, have been tracking just how devastating the science suggests it's going to be for the people of the subcontinent, as well as for people throughout the African continent and Latin America and elsewhere. And, of course, they are the people that have been least responsible for causing this problem. And in my early years at the Institute for Policy Studies, I was working hard to get the World Bank to move away from their fossil fuel investments in countries like India, because we could see that not only was it not providing the electricity that the poorest needed, it was actually going to some of the richest multinational corporations in the world that had moved to countries like India to soak up very low power rates for high energy intensive industries. Well, 20 years later, we managed to at least get a pledge that the World Bank would get out of all fossil fuels, and we managed to also get just this year the Biden administration calling on all the multilateral and bilateral development banks to get out of fossil fuel investments, starting with coal. But it's not enough. I now actually live in Washington State. We've moved from Oregon in part because of the fires there. My husband has bad asthma, and it was getting intolerable. So when we, you know, were in Oregon, we were fighting fossil fuel infrastructure and succeeding in passing some of the strongest ordinances in the country, calling for an end to all new fossil fuel infrastructure in the city of Portland. But still, what we're seeing in the background is methane levels skyrocketing. And I remember hearing in Kyoto about back in 97 about this methane class rates nightmare, and sort of filed that away as something to try to not lose sleep about. But I got recruited to take on the job of working with a team of scientists who are working very hard, largely with zero funding, some with minimal funding, to try to essentially undo the damage that methane is now doing to the planet. Now, your listeners, especially your scientific listeners, will know that methane is, you know, it's a very short-lived greenhouse gas, but it's also a very potent greenhouse gas. It's at least 84 times, and I've heard that they may be revising it up close to 100 times that of CO2 in terms of its global warming potential. And so if we include methane in today's atmospheric readings, we wouldn't be talking about 415 or 419 parts per million. We'd be talking about closer to 500 parts per million, which is terrifying when you think that, you know, pre-industrial times we were down below 300.
So we don't even include methane in those figures when you see them come out, 422 or 417 or?
No. The GWP of global warming potential of methane is not part of the overall calculation. And that was one of the things that in our at Methane Action, we released a sign-on letter back in April, and we managed to get some of the world's leading scientists like Michael Mann and Sir David King and Peter Wadhams from Cambridge and Rob Jackson and others all saying, you know, we need to revisit this whole concept of how we calculate the atmospheric climate forcing. People have this idea that we are at around 415 or so, but we are now, thanks to methane's contribution, and it has been spiking, we're now closer to 500 ppm. And you can see that sign-on letter up on our website, which is methaneaction.org. And the thing that's terrifying is that the scientists do not know why we've seen a very dramatic rise in methane levels in the atmosphere. It's essentially at 2.5 times pre-industrial levels of roughly 750 parts per billion. And we have seen a particularly sharp rise since 2007, and then a large spike in 2020. And the question is, where is this methane coming from? Of course, fracking has a lot to do with it. We know that fracking for oil and gas is releasing vast quantities of methane, both in the U.S. and in countries like Russia and elsewhere. And there was an excellent piece in the Washington Post recently about how Russia is downplaying its fugitive methane releases with just numbers all over the map, depending on what year they release them on what their emissions are. And so satellites are now being developed to help pinpoint the sources of methane that are seeping out from oil and gas wells. And, of course, coal mines also release methane. But the largest source of methane globally, and this was a surprise to me when I really started diving into the methane research, was agriculture. And, of course, a lot of that is due to cattle and other ruminants. We can certainly make some reductions in our fossil fuel methane emissions, and that's now making headlines with this methane pledge that the Biden team and the EU are going to be taking to the Glasgow summit. But that only pledges a 30% reduction below 2020 levels by 2030. And we already know that we are off the charts at 2020 levels. So clearly it's nowhere near enough. And it also only focuses on the fossil fuel sector. It does not focus on agriculture. And I'm sure that's for political reasons, as well as just the fact that it's harder to address a more distributed set of sources of methane from cattle and other waste dumps and that sort of thing. But both of these need to be tackled. And in the meantime, we are out of time because natural sources of methane are also rising. And that's the big shocker. As the planet warms, warming is breeding more warming. We've heard about permafrost, but what was news to me was that also another major source of rising methane is wetlands. As wetlands warm, they are releasing more methane. So methane removal is that, you know, that may be a bit of a misnomer. You know, people know about carbon removal, and if they make a parallel between carbon removal and methane removal, you would think, well, are you taking the methane and storing it somewhere? No. It's just shorthand for enhanced atmospheric methane oxidation, which is a little bit long-winded. But methane naturally oxidizes in the atmosphere via various chemical processes. It naturally breaks down into CO2 and water. And it also gets broken down in the soil. And the team of scientists that I'm working with are trying to figure out the best way of enhancing the natural way of breaking down methane in the atmosphere with the goal of cutting all atmospheric methane emissions in half this decade. So it's hugely ambitious. It's a bit of a moonshot initiative. And yet it's necessary if we're going to avoid even more dangerous feedback loops from the methane from natural sources all over the planet.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with guardedly exciting news. A new way to slow down warming within a decade and to help your health, too. Now back to Daphne Wysham from methaneaction.org. Well, we have champions for CO2 removal, and Jeff Bezos is putting out money into the climate fight. Elon Musk has a carbon capture prize. Does methane removal have a champion yet, and do you foresee a way to commercialize methane removal?
No and no. To be brief, we are running largely on individual donors who have seen the urgency of the science and have pulled together a team of really spectacular scientists from Stanford and Cambridge and Copenhagen and elsewhere. And we meet on a regular basis to discuss the latest science and what's the most promising. And there is some very promising science, but there's so little awareness in the funding community, much less in the NGO community, about the potential of methane removal as a game changer. If we can scale this up this decade, we could roll back climate forcing by some 20%, essentially back by, you know, gaining about 15 years or more. In other words, going back about 15 years in time in terms of the climate impact of global warming. So it's not a silver bullet. It would allow us to do all the many, many other things we need to do, which we're running out of time to do, including transitioning fully off of fossil fuels to 100% renewables as quickly as possible, doing all of the things we know we need to do with our forests and farms and fisheries and all of that. But this is one piece of the puzzle, and I really love the vision that Rob Jackson, who serves on our board and teaches at Stanford and chairs the Global Carbon Project, you know, he has a video that we have up on our website. You can watch it at methaneaction.org under his bio, where he talks about the need for a new narrative, a more hopeful narrative of climate restoration. You know, we have all, I was there when the 1.5 degree target was being urged as the upper limit, when, you know, before it was 2 degrees was thought to be the upper limit. And in many ways, these numbers are random, right? Numbers that we don't know how they will play out. We can see now, as you mentioned earlier with the heat dome, even at just a little over 1 degree Celsius, we're seeing just horrifying consequences. Who knows what 1.5 or 2 degrees will lead to? We need to be backpedaling as quickly as possible, cleaning up our atmosphere as quickly as possible, just as we would clean up the ocean of plastic if it was strewn across the ocean. We need to be doing that level of cleanup at the atmospheric level with a focus on methane because it is so potent, and undoing that potency has great potential for restoring the rest of the climate.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. Our guest is Daphne Wysham. She's a veteran activist and influential green mover. And now she's CEO of Methane Action and a fellow at the Center for Sustainable Economy. Daphne, what methane capture technology looks most promising to you?
Well, I don't. One of the things that we are trying to do at Methane Action is to remain agnostic. We do not want to be picking winners or losers, in part because we want to keep a very bright line between our nonprofit activity and our mission and whatever for-profit ventures people may want to pursue. And you had asked earlier, is there a business model? Some people think there may be. My feeling is this is an all-hands-on-deck moment where we need to scale up government investment in methane removal and not make it part of the carbon markets in any way. We are remaining agnostic on which technology is going to win. Some are at technological readiness stage 2, some are at 1. some are at 3. You know, we're at that point where really what is needed most is awareness that this is possible and funding. Because without that, the scientists can't get very far. And, you know, I've had some of my scientists say, you know, if I just, I had to return this equipment to a lab that I was borrowing, because we don't even have the money for the equipment. So it's crazy that we are spending billions on CO2 removal and virtually nothing on methane removal. And yet this is the methane moment, and we really do need to be focused on methane removal as well.
Well, from France, a scientist, Renaud de Richter, is investigating solar chimneys to help methane removal. What are those?
So Renaud de Richter is one of our senior scientists. He's a scientific advisor to Methane Action. He is obviously the best person to speak to the solar chimneys. I could give you a layperson's view of it, but essentially what it would do is transform through photocatalysis, transform methane into CO2 and water. By using these chimneys, the chimneys essentially would suck in the air through a passive, you know, as heat rises up the chimney in a, say, a desert environment, the air would circulate through these chimneys and it would be, you know, 100% powered by the energy of the sun. The methane would be broken down into CO2 through photocatalysis. Now, I that's about the extent of my explanation. You'd have to have him on to explain it in more detail.
Well, it could be almost like a sci-fi future where we have these giant towers, but not to cool coal plants or nuclear reactors, but to suck methane out of the atmosphere and sort of help the climate not go over that edge that we don't want to go over. The call for methane restoration has grown from a few scientists a few years ago to Cambridge conferences recently and the signed public letters that you mentioned. Is it becoming a movement? And do you think all scientists support this, or are there still some who are resisting and demanding only carbon capture?
I think that as people are becoming increasingly aware of this, we were surprised at how readily scientists signed on to not just our April letter, but then just recently we asked them to sign on in support of what we're calling a methane declaration. And the methane declaration would call on all governments to, first of all, calling on them to absolutely aggressively reduce and mitigate methane emissions at their sources, to secondly fund and initiate programs to monitor atmospheric methane, third, to initiate programs to develop the technologies that reduce atmospheric concentrations of methane safely and effectively, and then frame and implement the global governance for the use of methane removal technologies to restore methane levels to pre-industrial levels. So this is a four-part demand in our methane declaration, which you can find up on our website, methaneaction.org. And we recognize that governance is absolutely key in all of this, as is civil society engagement. We have gotten just a fantastic list of again, mostly scientists right now, but we are reaching out to the NGOs and had a wonderful hour and a half with Bill McKibben and informed him of the work of our team of scientists, and he wrote about it for The New Yorker, a really nice column for The New Yorker on the urgency of investing in methane removal.
That's fantastic work. I love it. So last week, Greenpeace published leaked documents from several countries trying to water down the Working Group 3 solutions, the report that's due out next spring. And it appears that the Saudis, backed by Australia and others, want scientists to delete phrases about phasing out fossil fuels. They say carbon capture and storage will let us keep burning their products. So again, could the prospect of methane capture help fossil fuel producers further delay the transition to renewables?
If you know me well enough, you know that that is the last thing that I would like to see happen. And I think it's one reason why we have prioritized transparency, accountability, and governance at every step of the way in our work with our scientists and with NGOs. And we're reaching out to Indigenous leaders as well. We do not want this to be a get-out-of-jail-free card for anybody that can and must reduce their methane emissions as quickly as possible. This is not a substitute for methane emissions, dramatic methane emissions reductions. That being said, as I said earlier, agriculture is the number one source of methane emissions. And while some of that can be mitigated, we can't get agriculture to zero. It's just not possible. And, you know, we're going to have to be dealing with the background levels of methane rising. So this is not a substitute for fossil fuel methane emissions reductions. It's in every document we produce, we say that must be step number one. And that would be step number one of the governance that we're going to be seeking at the global level.
Talking with Rob Jackson, we didn't have time to get much detail on the health benefits of getting methane back to pre-industrial limits. What does methane have to do with ozone? And aren't we trying to get more ozone back into the atmosphere anyway?
Well, there's two different types of ozone. There's ground-level ozone that is very hazardous. It causes asthma and other human health problems. It also reduces agricultural productivity. And methane is a precursor to ground-level ozone. By destroying and reducing atmospheric methane levels, we are also destroying and reducing or eliminating entirely one of the precursors to ground-level ozone, which is methane. Atmospheric ozone is another thing entirely. At the atmospheric level, methane also has an interesting interaction there. If methane makes it all the way to the stratosphere, where stratospheric ozone protects us from UV radiation, it can actually act as a catalyst for ozone destruction in the stratosphere. So by focusing on eliminating methane emissions in the atmosphere before it gets to the stratosphere, we're both protecting stratospheric ozone and we're also protecting human health and the environment from ground-level ozone.
What is the Biden administration position on methane, and could you talk to us about other methane control developments from Europe or China?
All I have heard is that this methane pledge is the big deal that they are going to be announcing at Glasgow. Over 30 countries, at last count, have signed on to the methane pledge. It's largely between the U.S. and the EU. However, as I said earlier, that 30% below 2020 levels by 2030 is minimal, and the UN Environment Program has said that we could go further and cut by 45% by 2030. So I would say that the bare minimum should be 45% as the UN Environment Program. In terms of China, I haven't been following their commitments. I hear they may not show up in Glasgow. I'm not sure if that's true, but there are some tensions between the U.S. and China right now that may be playing into all of this.
Human projects so often backfire, and sometimes the technology we build takes more carbon than it actually withdraws. Are there any signs of a downside to methane capture?
Enhanced atmospheric methane oxidation, what we're trying to do is mimic a process that is solar-powered and wind-powered. There is some evidence that the iron-rich dust from the Sahara, when it blows over the Atlantic Ocean, the sunlight combined with the sea salt spray and the iron in the dust oxidizes methane. It does this on a sort of a continuous process with the chlorine radical and the hydroxyl radical. So I am not a chemist, but some of the chemists that we work with would be happy to talk to you about this. There is virtually no energy required other than sunlight to catalyze this particular, and wind to catalyze this particular methane oxidation approach. There are other ways in which methane can be removed that are energy intensive. My understanding is that Rob Jackson is thinking about perhaps piggybacking zeolites, which can capture methane on these grids, on direct air capture machines so that you get a 1-2 punch. You get the CO2 captured, but you're also cycling through atmospheric methane, and passively it gets taken up by these zeolites. You know, I mean, I think that the challenge is going to be how to do this and do it without additional environmental side effects. And which is why we have already hired an independent environmental impact assessment company to work with us to evaluate whatever technologies rise to the top to make sure that they are 100% safe and compliant with international law.
Well, Klaus Lackner, another American scientist, came out with a letter saying, yeah, part of the problem is you have to move so much air through whatever you're going to catalyze and get the methane out because methane's so small in the atmosphere. So he said, well, one thing to consider is locating whatever capture units you're going to build in a place with a lot of air circulation, with a lot of wind, put it up on some rocky promontory where the wind always blows. So that will reduce the amount of energy and fans or other things required. And again, your solar chimneys answer that, where it just uses the convection of heat to draw it by. There should be workarounds so that we don't use too much to get what we really need.
Exactly. One idea is to take abandoned or oil platforms that are no longer being used for oil and gas and use them for some sort of mechanism for removing methane from the atmosphere.
Well, as we wrap up here, I wish you would tell us again about the Declaration on Reducing Atmospheric Methane, like who the signatories are and who should participate in this. Where's it going?
So we are, my colleague John Fitzgerald, who is our legal counsel, he and I are going to be going to Glasgow, and we are going to be delivering the Declaration on Reducing Atmospheric Methane to world leaders there. As I said earlier, we are taking signatories. You can sign on and sign up on our website if you'd like to endorse it. We've got a sign-up page there. And we're hoping to actually meet with the U.S. State Department next week to alert them to the need to include this in their work on methane so that simultaneous with pursuing methane emissions reductions from the oil and gas industry, that they also pursue the promise of methane removal and on an urgent basis.
Is there anything else you'd like to say to listeners, some of whom were your listeners on EarthBeat?
You know, one reason that I have decided to turn my attention to this particular body of work is I do feel like there is a new narrative needed of hope, as I said earlier, and of restoration, just as we have talked about ecosystem restoration for endangered species, or, you know, we've managed to restore the bald eagle. We are not yet familiar with the language of climate restoration, and I think methane removal and methane emissions mitigation is the low-hanging fruit around a vision that is far more hopeful than mitigating damage and, you know, avoiding catastrophe that may or may not happen at 1.5 or 2 degrees Celsius. So I urge people to look into the methane removal work that we're doing, and we'd love to engage partners globally in this effort.
We have been speaking with Daphne Washam, CEO of Methane Action. Find links to follow up in my show blog at ecoshock.org, and be sure to check out methaneaction.org. Daphne, thank you for your help and for talking with us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me, Alex.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
Light up your iPod or computer with tons of free green audio from our website at www.ecoshock.org. That's ECO, shock like an electric shock, .org.